Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a wild Thursday. Got breaking news, unhappy stars. It's the Herd in L.A., wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Last night was crazy. Two NBA games. Weird, unexpected, doesn't begin to explain what we saw last night. It is... I'll try to unpack it here in the next 7-8 minutes. Joy Taylor is joining me. How about the Clippers? What a performance by the Clippers.
How about the Hawks? We talked about that line at the end of the show. I think, what was it? 5 points, 7 points, 7 points.
Yeah.
It's a lot of points to give the Hawks, who play to the very end of the game. And they do not give up.
And nobody, house money, nobody expects anything. They're totally loose. Sixers are totally rigid.
Well, I would hope if, you know, more than two players scored in the second half.
For Philadelphia, yeah. So let's just talk about the Clippers for a second. This has not exactly been a step-up franchise. When you consider the circumstances, let's contextualize this. Consider all the circumstances. Was that the greatest night in Clippers history? I'm dead serious. Now think about this. At Utah, best home team in the league. Kawhi Leonard's out. The Jazz played their best quarter of the year. The pressure on Paul George and his playoff reputation. No Lakers, LeBron, so the West is wide open. You're massive underdogs. And you have an impatient owner who's unhappy with how you underachieved last year. And the Clippers played a, at times, flawless basketball game. First, even when they went down 0-2, last night was an example of why I said I still like them. They're just a deeper, more athletic team. I mean, Reggie Jackson's a 10-year journeyman. He's been a reliable stud in this series. Marcus Morris, forgettable player, right? He's been excellent. Big shots. Paul George, easily after Kawhi Leonard. He's the best two in this series. And Ty Lue has had one for the ages coaching series. He's been fantastic. But last night is also why they're the most maddening team in the league. I mean, think about this. Utah hit 10 threes in the first quarter. They were virtually perfect. Clippers were down one. What? What? Who could survive that? We would have never guessed the Clippers would survive that without Kawhi Leonard. Paul George, who's never in his career. I mean, there's Indianapolis pressure. There's OKC pressure. No, last night was pressure. Steve Ballmer's unhappy. Kawhi is out. The world's watching. LeBron's out of the way. This is your moment. Oh, Paul George had his best game, not only as a Clipper, he may have had his best game as a pro. This is why they're maddening. That was a snake pit last night. I mean, I literally gave the Clippers no chance in that game. That first quarter was the wildest first quarter in the league this year. Utah was flawless. Couldn't miss. Clippers down one. Almost down one. First of all, Ty Lue has had an unbelievable series. His manipulation of lineups. Last night he goes small. Rudy Gobert ends up with no blocks. When's the last time Rudy Gobert played in a big game, didn't have a block or six? He had no blocks. So this has really been an illustration. This, I hate to say this, but it almost felt like the Lakers. We've had dozens of games in the last 10, 15 years. Lakers just step up in the moment. Kobe, the Shaq, the dunk, the moment. We've had individual players, LeBron, KD, Chris Paul, give us moments. You got Paul George's reputation. You got the Clippers' reputation. And that's what I got. I hope every Clipper had a second Heineken flying back to L.A. Today is one of those. Savor the moment. Now, it's the NBA, so you play tomorrow. So you don't get much of one. You don't get a third beer on the flight home. That was an amazing performance. That was unbelievable. to overcome and withstand that first quarter by the Jazz, half this league would have been down 20, and to do it without Kawhi. Now, it should be noted that a lot of times a team will lose a star, and for a game, they elevate. It's like the substitute teacher. You know what I mean? Like everybody's nice to the substitute teacher. You have these moments where the star leaves or an important person leaves, and everybody kind of rallies around. It's like this micro community, and everybody plays above themselves. But Reggie Jackson's been good in multiple games. Morris hit shots in multiple games. Paul George been good in multiple games. Ty Lue's been great. This is a savor the moment. You're not going to have a lot of time to celebrate. Savor the moment, because that's when you contextualize it, you consider all the circumstances, the pressure on Paul, the pressure from Ballmer, the pressure from the LA media. You're playing the same building as the Lakers, and you gave us that in that snake pit is unbelievable. That is a great Clipper moment, and they haven't had a ton of them, and they haven't answered the bell in spots like that, but that was amazing. I just sat there in the first quarter. I'm like, they are just going shot for shot with the best three-point shooting team in the league, who was having their best three-point shooting quarter of the season. Clippers trailed by one. Wow. Here's Paul George after.
You know, it was no secret. I knew I had to be big tonight, and got to be big going forward. Believed in myself. My teammates trusted me. T-Lew trusted me. And, you know, I thought we lived in a moment, and we just played our hearts out tonight.
Is this what playoff P looks like?
Sure.
Now let's shift to a more catastrophic ending. Been watching the NBA a long time. Not sure I've ever seen anything as hideous as what happened to the Philadelphia 76ers. They led by like 18 midway through the third. That was awful. But it almost had to be that way. We've all heard the term before in life. You take a step back to take two steps forward. You know what I mean? You dissolve a business. You dissolve a relationship. You take a step back to move a couple steps forward. In a weird way, this may not be terrible. Now, I'm sure Philadelphia sports radio this morning is measured and nuanced. But for years and years, the media in Philly, the GMs, the one that got fired, the other one, now the new one, Daryl Morey, coaches. Oh, Embiid, Simmons, it works, it works, it works. This thing is going to work. It's like a Hollywood couple. They're beautiful people. It's going to work. But every time you see them, it looks clunky and they argue. And you're like, well, but they're both doing very well in their careers. Their children are beautiful. And then one time they have a fight and they at a Christmas party. And on the way home, the couples acknowledge, yeah, it doesn't work for us. It just doesn't work for us. The Sixers needed this because they have been telling me for years, oh, Embiid, Simmons work. They don't. Simmons needs the open lane to score. He doesn't trust himself. He doesn't even want to go to the free throw line. He's petrified. He's terrified. But he's gifted. Embiid is unbelievable. But he's still hurt. You needed this moment. So now Doc Rivers and Daryl Morey, when they meet, are not going to sit there with platitudes and go, you know, it'll come together. It is a mess. Sometimes you need a big blow up. You need a mess. You need a fight. You need a catastrophe to go, oh, crap. This isn't going to work. And it's okay because we've been talking ourselves into the Sixers for years. Every time I question it, I brought their coaches on. I bring their GMs on. I talk to Doc. Everybody's always, oh, it's talented, super. I know it doesn't quite look like it fits, but this morning nobody can say, you know, that's really going to win championships. It doesn't work. Simmons only works if the lane is open. You have to have Ben Simmons as your point, surround him with shooters, take that pressure off him. Embiid, there's a bunch of places he fits, hopefully with a point guard that can shoot. But he's going to clog the lane up. He's the closest thing we've seen in 15 years to Shaq. He's going to clog the lane up. You got to give him the lane. He gives you 28 a night. He's a monster talent. But the two together don't work. And Simmons, and you can tell It usually gets worse before it gets better. The couple that fight, it gets worse, worse, worse than the blow-up. This is getting worse now. Embiid now resents Simmons. Simmons now is not even indifferent. He doesn't want to be coached by it. Doc Rivers now, after the game, you know, is trying to tiptoe and walk around. What is clear is that Ben Simmons has missed more free throws in the playoffs than the Atlanta Hawks team has. Seth Curry and Embiid were the only guys that scored after the break for Philadelphia. Ben Simmons, in the last 2 second halves, has taken two shots. It doesn't work. Simmons needs a new start. Simmons needs an open lane. Simmons needs lots of shooters. You can't give up on Ben Simmons. He's talented. There's something there. He's too cool and indifferent for my taste. I missed on this evaluation. But he's too good of a player not to have him somewhere around for some organizations. But we were just going to talk ourselves for years into this thing works. You needed that. It crystallized everything. This just doesn't work. I mean, good God, you put Harden, Kyrie, and KD together, an hour later, we're like, whoo! I mean, you put KD, Clay, and Steph together, you're like, only one ball, hour later, whoo! It can't take this long. If you're in therapy twice a week, 9 years into a relationship, it can't be that hard. At some point, you got to be able to sit down on a television with each other on a Tuesday night, and you both got a cold and you feel like crap and somebody's crying upstairs and you're happy. You're just happy being together. It just kind of works. We just kind of hang out together. We just kind of like each other. This doesn't work. And I honestly think, though, this won't play well in Philadelphia today. You kind of needed this. A complete, utter disaster to wake everybody else to go, yeah, we probably got to blow this stuff up. We probably got to start this thing over. It's good for everybody. Simmons will go to a better place. Embiid probably stays. He'll get some shooters. Daryl Morey likes to make moves anyway. Doc Rivers has moved around the league. He's moved around players. Some like him, some don't. It's time to move on. This doesn't work. All right, so LeBron James. By the way, here's Doc Rivers talking about Ben Simmons and his free throw nightmare after.
You play minutes without Ben, right? During the game. And so I think we're equipped for that and we're ready to do that. Obviously we did it again tonight. Do you want to do that is a better question. And the answer would be no. But you know, when Ben makes them, we get to keep them in. When he doesn't, we can. And that's just the way it is.
Listen, I didn't like Carmelo, but he will be a Hall of Famer, top 10 scorer. Andrew Wiggins is underachieved, but he gives you 18 a night. Pretty good with the Warriors. Greg Oden, bust, but it wasn't his fault. He fell apart. Ben Simmons was given God's greatest gifts and is just wasting them away. He's too expensive to bail on. He's got value in the league. You just got to find the right spot, and it's not Philadelphia. Start over.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So this is a bit of a breaking story. Shams Charania and Joe Vardon, we've had them on the show in the last couple of weeks. Excellent NBA reporters for The Athletic. Talking about the end of Stan Van Gundy, got fired yesterday, I think, or the day before, and the ongoing battle to keep Zion Williamson happy. Sources from all NBA corners have pointed to the Pelicans as a heap of dysfunction. Most of the attention, it says here, from numerous sources has centered on Zion's family members' thinly veiled unhappiness with the Pelicans and whether those feelings have seeped into the player's own views. His family doesn't want him in New Orleans. Williamson obviously played in New York this year, went on and on about how much he loved it. Two sources said during the bubble last year when Zion disappeared, the thought was he was injured, but it was a minor injury, and there was a lot of questions about that disappearance. Williamson's family members, not a fan of Van Gundy, who's very rigid, preaches defense. He did not like Zion, did not like the Pelicans trading J.J. Redick to Dallas in March because J.J. and Zion had grown very, very close. J.J. Redick said of the situation, I don't think you're going to get honesty from New Orleans front office, objectively speaking. It points to a picture from two very legitimate NBA reporters of Zion's family not wanting him in New Orleans, not being happy with the previous coach or the J.J. Redick trade. Now, this is something we have discussed, is that young NBA players always sign their contract extension with the team. LeBron did it in Cleveland, his first contract option, because there's just so much more money. Zion could be the first. Now, veteran players move all the time and give up money. We know that. We've seen that. Chris Bosh, LeBron James. That happens all the time. Kevin Durant. Stars move all the time, but they've got their $150 million in the bank. Zion is such a big deal in terms of merch and marketing and shoes. I have speculated before. I think I speculated during the season two or three times. I have a feeling he will be the first player to not sign that contract extension. Now, in order for that to be true, he would have to go to a major market like New York and LA and be able to get that money back. Like, you can't go from New Orleans to Milwaukee. You got to go to a place you're going to win, you're going to be on television, and advertisers want you. Listen, LA is just different, folks. California in the pandemic had a $75 billion surplus. The economy in California is the fourth biggest in the world. He's not going to be able to go to New Orleans to a mid-level market. He's got to go to a New York or LA where if you don't get that extension money, because you'll get money, but you won't get extension money, you got to make it up somewhere. Also, he's going to have to at some point force a trade because they can match it, right? So it's interesting that the family is very, very unhappy. It gives Zion a little bit of an out. It's like, hey, my family doesn't want me here. Family wants me out of here. Will Zion be the first young star to not do the contract extension with the team that drafted him? I think there's a real shot. This article points out. It almost feels like this is the appetizer for that meal, which is get ready. It's being discussed. Zion's unhappy. His family's really unhappy. The Pelicans appear to be dysfunctional. It's a little appetizer. It's a little tease, but it's a tease about something we have discussed on this show.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
I mean, I do this about once, twice a year. It's like, we got to be, I love Russell Wilson. But what did I say after the Seahawks went and got Gabe Jackson, Gerald Everett, new coordinator? I said, okay, Russell. They did you good. Go win games.
Yeah.
Got to be fair. I love LeBron, but we got to be fair here. So LeBron came out yesterday and raced to Twitter. He does this a lot. I'm not a huge fan, but he banged on the NBA. It was basically, without boring you, I told you so. We shouldn't have come back so soon. The players needed more rest, blah, 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 blah. So just as a matter of fact, let's talk about some of the players that have been hurt in the playoffs. I'm going to mention names. See if you have any common thread here. Nurkic in Portland, AD, Embiid, Kawhi, Kyrie, KD, Mike Conley, Chris Paul. Oh, wait, they get hurt all the time. A lot of the guys that are hurt, are stars, have been hurt a lot. Now, Donovan Mitchell's injury could be fatigue because they've asked so much of him, but Mike Conley's been hurt since 2013. KD hurt, AD hurt, Embiid hurt, Kawhi hurt, Kyrie hurt, Nurkic hurt. Folks, a lot of these guys are hurt all the time. Jaylen Brown of the Celtics, it was a wrist injury. That's not a fatigue injury. He banged up his wrist. You can't blame fatigue. I do think the Donovan Mitchell injury, like they've just, like if he was a pitcher, they're asking him to throw 300 innings. Like that one feels like a fatigue issue. So let's start with that. Let's slow down on every injury is the NBA's fault. Here's the second thing, though. And listen, we've all gone through this together. The NBA got a terrible break. The pandemic hit in the middle of their damn season. The NFL sat there and was like, you know, I wouldn't do that. NFL had 8 months to watch everybody have to deal with this. The NBA got hosed. February, March, it's right when their season gets interesting. Pandemic. So I'm going to give them a little leeway. It's one thing if you can see something coming that's a problem. When it lands in your lap, it's really, really difficult. So the NBA, during the pandemic, they lost 50% of their audience, $1.5 billion. They were hemorrhaging money. They were hemorrhaging viewers. They hadn't solved the pandemic. Our president, our White House hadn't. Our Congress, our Senate, we couldn't get our arms around the pandemic. And it was right in the middle of it. And so the NBA's like, okay, we're losing money and audience. We got to get back to playing. We can't keep pushing this thing off. And so they had to create a slightly condensed schedule of 72 games. And by the way, they did a great job in the bubble. They had virtual fans. There was no fans there. The bubble is the best you could have done, creating a league in a tiny little community at a theme park resort. They did an unbelievable job. They didn't have a single player test positive. Even Lou Williams going to Atlanta to get chicken wings come back wasn't positive. The league did an incredible job. Incredible. I mean, if you're on the freeway and you can see a wreck on your car, on your phone, like 5 miles up, you can take exits to it. If you're driving and an 18-wheeler next to you falls in front of you and you end up getting into the car wreck, that's what the NBA dealt with. Pandemic, now deal with it. Figure it out. Well, we didn't even know how to test. We thought if you touched surfaces in your kitchen, you'd get it. Nobody knew anything. And they're dealing with it live, real time. NFL got a huge break. 7 months to watch all the mistakes. So for LeBron to jump on the bandwagon now and say, I told you so, it's not good optics. That's not what you do. You don't jump on and say, I told you so. Listen, we all have our told you so moments, right? It's fun, right? Like to be right. But if you look at what they have done, think about what restaurants in America did. It didn't matter if you were black, white, conservative, liberal, rural, city. It didn't matter. Old, young, we all dealt with this in real time. It's hard. I mean, California literally overnight changed a rule. You can get cocktails to go. Restaurants in cold cities. Let's eat outdoors. And these restaurateurs, 9 of 10 made it. We're all in this thing together. Don't be a I told you so guy in the pandemic. I don't want to hear that. Let the cable companies and all the experts tell you. They knew everything. We've all been just trying to get through this nightmare for 19, 18 months. Overwhelmingly, restaurateurs, states, senators, congresspeople, commissioners did a really incredibly admirable job to get through this mess. And the NBA, I mean, at least baseball usually starts in April. NFL starts in September. NBA's halfway through the season. Pandemic takes over the country. And they got a season in with no tests in a bubble. No positive tests. It's amazing. And this year, they were hemorrhaging money. They had to get back on the court. They had to play. Otherwise, the owners get all the power and the players don't. And Adam Silver had to negotiate that constantly. He's fighting with the Players Association people. The owners are yelling at him. The owners all have their own agendas. The networks are yelling at him. The ratings are going down. The banks are yelling at Adam Silver. This is not a time to say, I told you so. If you knew what Joy and I and this company have been going through for 18 months, just next week, I don't have to do 3 nose tests a day. Next week, I'm down to 1. Okay? Still masks everywhere. I don't see bosses for months. We're all Zoom calling it. I get I told you so. I've had I told you so moments. We all have them. Can we all just stop it during the pandemic? We all got through this thing. It's been brutal. Let's just root for each other. Let's just get through this thing. I didn't like that. That was the LeBron I wasn't a big fan of. So there you go. I'll be nice for the next 10 months, but I didn't like that. Not a fan of it.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
All right, Jason Terry I'm a fan of. 19 NBA seasons, a champ, a sixth man of the year. The Jet, Jason Terry, is now joining us live. By the way, you know, it's funny. When you get these guys, you've been playing in the league so long, Jet. It's funny. You have had, just to name your coaches, you've had Doc Rivers, Rick Carlisle, Terry Stotts, Jason Kidd. You've played with Giannis and Harden and Dirk and Kevin Garnett and Chris Middleton and Paul Pierce. You have had so many experiences in your NBA career. But Do you ever remember something like Philadelphia where the star point guard appears to be terrified of the free throw line? I don't know how you solve it. I mean, when you're watching Philadelphia, what do you do if you're the Sixers going forward?
Well, going forward, you have to figure out how to make him confident. I mean, when you talk about free throw shooting, right? We all have the ability to shoot free throws, but there's the innate ability to make free throws and then make them when the pressure's on the line. One, you got to look at his form and technique. Okay, is there that? It doesn't seem like it's a technical issue. This is all between the ears. It's all psychological. There has to be someone on that staff or within that organization that can calm his nerves when he goes up to the line. I mean, it's easier said than done, but I mean, one thing is repetition. That's how we all get great. But the second thing is his psychological warfare that he's having within himself. He has to get up there, relax, block out everything, and just knock them down. They're free. The last time I checked.
Yeah. That's a good point. Jason Terry joining us. So, you know, it's really interesting. It's a younger league than it's ever been. Lucas starring, Trae Young, Zion. Trae Young is fascinating because he came into this league, Jason, and people said he can't defend. He's frail. He's too small. He led college basketball in turnovers. And you look up and you're like, he's what everybody in the league wants. Confident, go-getter, knock him to the floor, great shooter. The first time you saw Trae Young, did you buy into it? I mean, because I went and looked this morning at a draft, the draft analysis of it, and there were a lot more weaknesses than strengths. And I'm watching him just take this series over. Are you surprised at all by him?
Well, one thing as a former assistant GM with the Legends in the G League in Frisco is that when you evaluate talent, you got to look at the guy that lines up. And when I looked at Trae Young at the University of Oklahoma, right away I could see the at which he played the pace of the game. I knew he was a pro. And then when you watched his ability to create plays and make certain reads out of pick and roll situations, you knew he had things that would make him special. And then you add the range at which he shoots the ball with and the confidence. Now you're talking about superstar potential. Then you fast forward. You go to his career at the Atlanta Hawks. Okay, first year, yeah, it's a little rough. It's a little rocky. He's a rookie. But now he's seen all the competition. He understands how to play within the system and then how to get his game off. And when he does it with flair. He does it with dramatic. And he's confident. To have the confidence to go out in a playoff game and lead your team to victory in the opposing team's arena, I'm talking about in Madison Square Garden on the biggest stage. I mean, this kid is a superstar. I'm so happy for him. I started my career in 99 in Atlanta, was drafted by them, never played a playoff game in that uniform. But I know it's special, not only for him, his teammates, but for the city of Atlanta. It's a football town, baseball town. But now the Hawks are making it their own.
Jason Terry, the Jet, joining us. He's at University of Arizona, beautiful Tucson, Arizona. My buddy Jed Fish is the football coach, so I'm all in on the Wildcats, great university. You know, Luka, a story today, not happy in Dallas. Zion, a story today, not happy with New Orleans. You have a lifetime of NBA experience. What would you tell Zion and Luka this morning if you could sit them down? Should they want to be out if they sense dysfunction? Should they stay and deal with it? You can waste a lot of years in this league, Jason, if you get the wrong owner, the wrong GM, or the wrong coach. What would you say to Luka and Zion, who are both like kids and both stars and both very unhappy?
Well, the one thing that they have to understand because of the age at which they're at, and you know they only been in the league for a small sample size, you got to engulf yourself in what can you do to make yourself better? What can you do to help yourself? If you start to get entrenched in the business of basketball and ownership and management and trying to manipulate and put this coach or that teammate here or there, then you're going to lose a part of what makes you great. When you watch Luka Doncic and Zion play, these guys are phenomenal. They're game changers, I like to call them. And, you know, they're cornerstones of a franchise. And right now, at this particular point of their career, it's about developing their own skill set and getting better. I mean, if you look at Luka Doncic, where does he have room to go? You got to look at his physique and the physical nature of how he's designed and wired. Zion's very similar. I mean, he's muscular, he's strong, but there has to be an endurance factor that he's going to have to go through so he can play a rigorous amount of season and then, you know, have some postseason success. So, you know, for me, it's about them looking within themselves and seeing how they can be better to help the franchise and not what the franchise can do for them, because it's still too early. Now, once they get up into their years of Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and LeBron James, then you can start to look at the business side of basketball and think about management and where you would like to go. But I'm telling you, the grass is not always greener on the other side. And those two franchises are positioned right now where they can be the cornerstone and they can have a long, luxurious career. With Luka, he just got to look at Dirk. You know, Dirk was there for 1 year with him. And if he looks at him and allows him to mentor him, he can own that city. The city of Dallas is his.
Jason, you know, the reality, basketball is a unique culture. If I'm scoring, you're not. If I'm a quarterback and I throw a touchdown pass, I get credit for the pass. You get credit for the touchdown catch. We both hit a bonus. And the left tackle gets credit for blocking. He hits a bonus. In basketball, I'm scoring, you're not. And nobody that has a lot of assists get paid. It's a scorer's league. And I look at Brooklyn and I say, man, this thing is, it's going to be hot, but it may burn out fast. Are you surprised that here's Brooklyn, they've got control of the series, three stars, two are hurt, and it's just kind of, and Steve Nash has never coached. Are you surprised it's kind of worked with all the big personalities thrown together?
Not surprised whatsoever. When you're talking about the Brooklyn Nets and you look at Kevin Durant, like, it's hard to say he's underrated, but when you listen to all these talk shows and all these analysts, I mean, he's kind of underrated. Like, they don't give Kevin Durant nearly enough credit. He takes way too much flack for leaving Oklahoma City when he did, right, and leaving and joining Steph Curry. He wanted to be a champion, and he understood if he went to Golden State, he could make his dreams a reality. He did that, and now – later on in his career, he wants to be a champion again. He wants to etch his name in stone as one of the greatest players to ever play this game. And with that performance the other night, I hate to be a guy that says, like, I'm going to judge a guy off one game. But if you watch that performance, like, there was literally nothing the Milwaukee Bucks could do. I know they talked about putting Giannis on him. Okay, put Giannis on him. I mean, LeBron James couldn't guard him in the NBA Finals. So you want to put Giannis on him? Go ahead. Kevin Durant is one of the greatest scorers, and forget scoring, basketball players that I've ever seen. And you got to remember, on our road to a championship, we're just so grateful and fortunate that Kevin Durant was just a young tyke when we went to Oklahoma City.
Listen, a lot of people are saying there's a bunch of injuries. It's because the NBA rushed back. But of the players that have been hurt so far this year, AD, Embiid, Kawhi, Kyrie, Chris Paul, Nurkic, Mike Conley, it's a lot of dudes that get hurt. I mean, it's these are guys that have been hurt before. I talked to Gary Payton the other day about this, and he said, you know, he goes, I played 80 games a year, and I had to guard bigger guys, and the league didn't have, we didn't have, like, the treatment. We didn't have the trainers. He said, but in the end, I played hurt, and that was the reality of it. He said, but players didn't have the power. So, I mean, the coaching staffs would be on you. You were lifting three hours a day. As players have gotten more power, nobody's going to tell a star player he's got to sit in the weight room for 2.5 hours. And Gary's argument was players now are more skilled than they've ever been. But the reality is the weight training, the practices, the players have more power now. Some of this is guys break down because, that you know, Anthony Davis, they don't put the time in the room, the off-season room. Your thought on all the injuries to all the stars, is there one reason, two reasons? What's your guess?
Well, I got to believe, and I'm old school, and I played 19 years and only have, you know, I wouldn't even call it a major injury, kind of like a knee clean out towards the end of my career. But I think because these guys in the off seasons, they have these maintenance programs. You know, the off season is built to design to push your body to limits that you wouldn't ordinarily go to. So then when you get to the rigors of the seasons, you know, the dog days of January or the postseason when you're deep into May, into June, when you get late into the finals and you're trying to make a push, make a run, everybody's banged up. But if you've pushed yourself to those limits in the off season, then your body is more susceptible to being to be able to handle, you know, that type of pounding and those type of rigors. And you don't have those soft tissue type injuries. And so again, you got to go to the these people are so smart now with trying to, what do you want to call it, game manage or, you know, manage these guys' minutes throughout the season. Sometimes you got to go through it to get to it. And I think there's a toughness factor to it. But then again, everybody has a different body type. And so I never was the type of guy to criticize someone on if, you know, their pain threshold, so to speak. I was tough. I was a guy that, man, I wanted to play. I'd have to be physically dead not to go out there and lace them up, especially in the biggest moments of the season. I got to give James Harden a lot of credit because I know hamstrings are sensitive. And he's not going to be the type of player that how dynamic he is with a hamstring type injury. But he got out there. He willed himself to even be out there in the lineup. So you got to take your hat off to James. And it was good to see.
Jason Terry, finally, you played with Giannis before your career ended. He's a terrific kid. There's things he can do. He is a bit of a liability late in games because of free throws. Have we been unrealistic in our expectations? Or I mean, I look at him and I just think, okay, this is what he is. He's great defensively, very long. He plays bully ball. But, you know, outside of 4 feet, he shoots about 33%. He's not the face of the league. He's not LeBron. Let's stop comparing him to great players. He's a tremendous kid, a winning basketball player. But there is a ceiling here. He can be marginalized. You push him away from the basket, he's not the same guy. Do you buy into that, or do you think he's scratching the surface? Or, I mean, where are you on Giannis today?
Well, I spent a lot of time with Giannis in his development in Milwaukee my last 2 years of my career. And, you know, watching him, his work ethic, and his ability, you know, to pass the ball from all different angles, and then just the uniqueness of his size and his athleticism. I mean, he's just now scratching the surface of what he's going to be. And I think, you know, at some time when you're a young superstar going through this league, there has to be failure along the way. And he's going to continue to, you know, have his ups and downs, his bumps and bruises, and he'll go through it. But at the end of the day, I mean, he will realize his championship dreams. I don't know if it's going to be this year, because when you look at what he's facing, I mean, Kevin Durant, if James Harden's out there, Kyrie, I mean, it's just a tough road to hoe. And again, as a coach, as a staff, we have to figure out ways to utilize Giannis without him bringing the ball up as a point forward. I mean, we have to play him in the post where he has an advantage, or in pick and roll situations where Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton are the ball handlers, and we can use Giannis as a roller, put him in the middle of the defense. He can make any pass from there. And like you said, his biggest skill set is 2 feet in the paint, and nobody's going to stop him. So, you know, just from a strategical standpoint, utilizing him a little bit different. But then at the end of the day, guys still have to make shots. Guys still have to make plays. And I just think right now, I mean, they have a huge opportunity tonight in game 6 at home where they play well and they shoot the ball well. But then if they win this one, they still got to go back into Brooklyn. And that's a tough place to play.
Jason Terry, great seeing you. Continued success. Assistant coach with the Arizona Wildcats in Tucson. Good talking to you, my man. Appreciate you stopping by.
Appreciate you. What's up, Joy? We didn't give you no love. Good to see you.
Hi, Jason.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Jay Glazer said this yesterday about Aaron Rodgers on the Pat McAfee show. Here's this piece of tape.
I know he still wants out, without a doubt. Absolutely. Still wants out. But every time somebody called the Packers, it was immediately shut down. So, look, what these teams need to do is continue to call and continue to call.
By the way, Pat McAfee's losing weight. Random thought. Secondly, there's an article from Matt Lombardo. Don't know him. Works for Fanside. And he talked to a former NFL GM that said, Aaron's selfish. Guys don't like him. It's about Aaron. They all deal with him because he's a superstar. He helps guys make money, put food on the table for the kids, and people respect him for that. Multiple sources around the NFL, according to the article, believe what's most likely to happen at first. Rodgers stays away through training camp. Jordan Love gets the reps, you know, game speed reps, practices, and then eventually they bring Aaron back. You know, one of the things about this is, you know, Fox has a huge NFL package. So when I criticize players, I don't want to get personal. Like Baker Mayfield, most of my stuff overwhelmingly is tongue-in-cheek. I hated when he called out his medical staff. I said he was a jerk. That's a little personal, but I thought he was. You know, with Aaron, hey, I don't want to be personal with Aaron. I've been critical of Aaron before. I think it's reasonable. You have so many different people saying the same thing. How about if I just say this? Tom Brady is easy. Aaron's hard. Aaron's hard. He's a harder personality. Tom takes pay cuts. Tom appears to have a happier home life. Tom has a big family. Tom lives in a world of sacrifice. When you're young, good-looking, rich, and single, you're not going to make as many sacrifices. When you're older, more experienced, you're married, you have kids, she has a great career, your kids are growing. Married people's lives are a little more sacrifice-based. Young, single, rich, good-looking people, they're kind of doing their own thing when they want to do it. I think Aaron's a little harder. Now, they're very similar in that they're both endorsement kings. They're both Hall of Famers. They both have three MVPs. They're both the classic franchise, good-looking quarterback. There's a lot they have in common. There's a story in the Washington Post last year that I think really speaks to Tom Brady. And I think this is fair. So the story in the Washington Post is they were talking about Tom. He does something with every single person he ever meets for the first time. Four words. He walks up and goes, "Hi, I'm Tom Brady." So what Tom is really doing, he knows you know he's Tom Brady. What is he doing? I want you to think about this for a second. What is Tom doing there? No, he's doing something. It's smart. I'll give you another second. Tom is telling you, "I'm not better than you. Hi, I'm Tom Brady. I'm not going to presume you're intimidated or know who I am." It's Tom's greatest gift. It's not his arm. It's not his body. Tom's ability to, as he's grown in stature and wealth, "Hi, I'm Tom Brady." He is telling you, "I'm one of you." Aaron's vibe tends to be a little, "I'm better than you." And he is usually. But I think Brady's gift is that Tom, for his stature, is pretty damn easy. He's kind of a coach on the field, takes pay cuts, gets along. "Hi, I'm Tom Brady." That's why he ages well. That style ages well.